Well, good morning. A delight to see you all here. And for all those joining from home, we're glad for you as well. There is a delightfully descriptive Italian word that I would like to use here on this fifth Sunday in Lent. The word is rovesciamento. It can be translated something like to turn everything upside down. It's used in agriculture to describe tilling the earth to prepare for new planting. It's used in politics to describe revolutionary change. Theologian James Allison reflects on its application in operas where rovesciamento occurs, usually at the end of Act One, as an upending of all that was thought to be true in the stage play, setting the stage for Act Two and a new world order derived from it. It could easily be applied, this term, to good literature, to films and stage plays. Indeed, there's a Shakespearean quality to this notion of rovesciamento. But sticking with opera and with Allison's theological reflection, Act One often has the characters plot a course together, falling in love, making deals, accumulating wealth or fame or love or some ascendant prospect. But it's all premised on scheming and misrepresentations or betrayal. And there is often one among the characters who is not whom they seem to be. The prince, the pauper, is actually a prince. Or one's lover has been deceptive. Or the riches one has gained are snatched from their grasp by a cunning friend. This Act One world is seeded with something that is false, and the moment of rovesciamento comes when all the characters unfold to the real truth. Everything they thought they knew is turned upside down. Each sings their own tune of shock or sadness or anger or denial, and the composer of the opera weaves their voices into a brilliant lyrical crescendo as some characters storm off stage, refusing to accept the new reality, never to be seen again. Others stomp their feet and want to fight before they too will exit stage left. Still others may whimper off stage with heads down, sad for all that they've lost. All this rovesciamento leaves the new protagonist alone and unmasked to sing her aria that sets the stage for scene two, for act two. Now, friends, we'll get to act two in time, but I'm asking you just for a few moments to stay in the discomfort of rovesciamento, this notion. Surely we can say that the last year has been a time of turning everything upside down, right? And Lord knows the last week is a microcosm of that. Now, I was taught that preachers should preach with the Bible in one hand and the newspaper in the other. And this week, my friends, the newspapers were packed full of rovesciamento. You know it. A Vatican statement released Monday meant to clarify its official position on gay marriage. Nothing new, but did so in a most painful way, an unnecessarily painful way. That was, in my estimation, the church functioning in an Act One structure, you see. On Tuesday, my alma mater in Tennessee made national news when several students who attend Sewanee, a liberal arts college of learning, of growth, it is an Episcopal university, no less, these students yelled racial slurs toward black athletes visiting for a lacrosse game, and these students had to be expelled from the bleachers before the game could continue. On Wednesday, this cathedral hosted a press conference out on its front steps, calling for immigration reform once more as we stand in solidarity with one man who was held in detention for 20 months against all our nation's constitutional and legal norms, and with another man who this week will mark the second anniversary of his being in sanctuary refuge on this cathedral campus, simply so he and his family can remain together. On Thursday, I shared my thoughts about the hate crimes in Atlanta, which brought home the fact to me, and hopefully to you, that Asian Americans here in our city and in our beloved cathedral community live in fear of violence to their bodies and spirits. This is not okay. These are all manifestations of an Act One world run amok. And here on the fifth Sunday in Lent, which traditionally was known as Passion Sunday, which means suffering is a central theme for us to consider, we get Psalm 51. And we hear Jeremiah's convincing words of a covenant broken by infidelity, by betrayal, but nevertheless met with an Act Two God who will renew the covenant with God's people nevertheless. And we hear Jesus speak of the seed dying in order to bear its fruit, and the Son of Man dying in order to usher in the glory of God. The glory of God, which is a way of saying the reign of God, true and right and good, the reign of God prevails by succumbing first. Everything upside down. Now, in the opera, Act Two often has the tables turned in a story of revenge. The meek maid in Act One turns out to be none other than the fearsome Russian Tsarina, who metes out her retributive force of will upon all the characters who did her alter ego wrong. And that's one storyline, vengeance, which at some level makes sense to us all as humans. Somewhere in our beings, for some reason, we want pain exchanged for pain, power exchanged for power, fear exchanged for fear, violence exchanged for violence. But Jesus is saying something quite different to us. And if we get stuck there in transacting exchanges, we will just repeat Act One in our lives again and again and again. That's the story of human history. No, Jesus is casting a vision for something very different. All of the isms of the world are Act One falsehoods woven into the score of life. Racism, sexism, classism, ableism, and so forth. All the isms. Our desires are distorted by these isms. And no one is immune from this. Rovesciamento is the moment of awareness that the isms are actually false. And we must ask ourselves, what are we going to do about it? Rovesciamento catalyzes the potential for the truth to unfold in our very own lives. And folks, we are in such a moment where everything is being turned upside down. But it is not yet Act Two. And we have choices to make about how we will move from here. All of this is to say that dealing with the isms is not the end point for us as individuals, for us as a church, for us as a nation even. Not the ultimate purpose we have in life as people of faith. It is important work, hear me, and we cannot skip past it. But addressing the isms is penultimate work. It's essential work. But if we get stuck dealing with the isms only, we will simply be exchanging one ideology for another. And Jesus isn't interested in ideologies. That's Act One stuff. And he says, leave it behind. Now, to be sure, the church and many of its leaders, myself included, can fall into the trap of thinking, well, we're the ones to usher in Act Two. We are in Act Two, when in fact what we are doing often is mostly perpetuating Act One schemes. The truth is, we all have our places in the Act One structure over and over again. But Jesus turned it all upside down, not to cast an Act Two filled with revenge tropes or power flips, but to demonstrate a new thing, a radical way of being in the world whereby everyone might come to know their true self as beloved, as worthy, and invited to love in real life-giving ways. That is the stage on which the true story of life plays out, the second act, the one where our desires meet and match God's desires for us and for all creation. An Easter love story to which you are invited to audition, but in which everyone has a part. And I assure you, it will be worth the work. It will be worth the wait.